Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 405.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we ring in the season with a bunch of allergies. I am your host, Nagin Farsad. And if you were pollen, you probably already know that because you love climbing into my nose. Today, we're going to talk about the moment when you look at a pair of pants that don't fit and wonder, like, should I keep them? And this should apply to everyone listening, unless you're one of our toddler listeners. We'll also talk about the inshittification of internet platforms and how anxious parents are 10xing the problem with their children. Today, I am so excited for this panel. What a great panel we have lined up for you today. Joining us for the first time is the co-host of the Go Touch Grass podcast, which I've been on, which is such a fun pod. Mm-hmm. And she's so fun and she's so funny because she is the wonderful Elise Morales. Hey, Elise.
Wow. Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah.
After our lengthy chat about the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience, I'm happy to get in some more important news.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Like pants.
Like pants.
We're also joined for the manyth time. You guys know this guy, you love this guy. It's a Persian sandwich. Every time he's on the show, he's a comedian, he's an actor, he's a filmmaker, he's one of my co-panelists on Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's also got dates. You could see him on tour in Dallas and Detroit, and you can look at all of his dates on MazJobrani.com. So titled because he is the wonderful Maz Jobrani. Hey, Maz.
Hi, Nagin. How funny would it be if that were your website?
I should have taken it, because I think your website probably gets more traffic than mine. Folks, before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners that if they want to support the show, they can go to patreon.com/NaginFarsad to support the show. For as little as $4 a month, you get extra episodes. It's so fun. We talk about silly and ridiculous things, and it's where we really let our hair down as a show. So go to patreon.com/NaginFarsad. There's many levels of support. All right, let's get into it with topic number one. Now, in many ways, this is the most important issue that we will have ever talked about on Fake the Nation. We read a piece in the Times called My Pants No Longer Fit, Should I Get Rid of Them or Keep Them Just in Case? Now, this is a question alongside climate change solutions that has plagued me my entire life here on planet Earth. Okay. And so my first question to you both is, have you ever looked at a pair of pants and wondered, they don't fit, should I get rid of them or keep them just in case? And please note that your answers will be recorded for a historical archive that is going into, you know, the Library of Congress. Elise, where do you stand on this issue?
I will say that as soon as you read the title, there were three pairs of pants that just flashed before my eyes that are sitting in my closet right now. And I say, is it time? Is it time for them to go? It's tough. I'm a weight fluctuation queen. And so I am always fitting in and out of pants. I've pants of all sizes. All pants are welcome here. So yes, I've been faced with this question many a time. I try to be better about getting rid of things that I'm keeping in kind of this weird, like, aspirational, like, but one day,
right,
type of way. But sometimes they're a pair of pants that I really loved, and maybe I'm holding onto them for the memories. They're nostalgia pants.
Maz, do you have any nostalgia pants? Do you have pants that are just straight up your enemies that you keep lying around? Like, what's your relationship with this?
I have never kept a pair of pants for nostalgia. I'm not that into my pants. But that said, once in a while, I will have a situation where I haven't worn a suit in a while, and then I will try to put the suit on, and the pants are a little tight, and then I see that as a challenge to lose that weight. Yeah, it's a French challenge to slim down a little bit and fit back into that suit. And sometimes I succeed and sometimes I don't. But that's the only reason I would keep it around, is because when you're ready for doing your little intermittent fasting or something, then you can really test it and go, oh, wow, it actually works.
Yeah.
That's the only reason you keep old pants, in case you want to test to see if intermittent fasting works.
So we have nostalgia pants. We have intermittent fasting pants. We're really, like, I feel like innovating the pants categories on this show today, and I'm really impressed with us. First of all, I love clothes. I wear them every day, okay? I'm not, you know, that's just my thing. But I really, like, I'm a clothes horse. I love fashion. I love all of that stuff. And so for me, this, like, really struck at the very core of my soul, because I have saved a lot of pants that don't fit, you know, in a torturous way, I think, mostly. I mean, I've also saved some pants in the other direction that are too big for me, because, like, I did. I mean, and it's funny because these pants, all of them, are telling a story. And one of the stories is you used to eat a lot of bagels and then you cut bagels out, right? And so that's a story. And so it's like, do I keep those? Is there some interesting, because I for the fashion of it, I feel like I keep some things. There's another story that pants have told, which is that you did IVF and it was traumatizing and your body went through 17 different sizes in the course of a year and a half. Bless your heart, you survived and you have a child. So that's another story these pants are telling. There's just, like, you were trying to look like Bjork. You did some crazy shit. What were you thinking? Maybe you should keep them because that was a weird phase and they look like swans, you know? Elise is looking at me like,
that
I have those.
That is resonating with me, because I feel like to even move it away from a size conversation, sometimes I'm like, okay, these pants aren't in style now, but what if they come back and suddenly these are the most fashionable pants anyone's ever seen?
Yes.
And I got rid of the pants.
Right,
And you know, I cling to my skinny jeans as a millennial woman?
Yeah.
They should have just a pants storage space, just the space for pants. Like you have storage for everything else, then you get storage for pants. And you go to the pants storage warehouse and you have all your pants from all these years are there.
Yeah.
And then you can you have to throw them away.
Yeah.
I'm seeing this side hustle for you. Maz Jobrani's pants storage warehouse. I can see the subway ads.
I know. Well, you know, it's funny because I've been driving. I've been like on a subway or maybe in a cab. I've seen these like huge ads from Manhattan Storage along the side of like the FDR or something. And they're very political. Like they're like,
yes,
they're like you, like these both of these guys are old, and it'll be like, you know, it'll be like Trump and Biden on these ads. And it's like, you know, you don't use them, put them both in storage or something like that. I don't know. I'm like fucking up the ad. But first of all, I was like, this is remarkably political for a storage unit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like I don't usually think warehouse takes a stand.
Yeah. Like, I generally don't think of, like, storage units as having too much of a political, like, ideology. But I love the idea of, like, you know, because it's funny. And I think my husband has a graveyard of pants he doesn't wear that he keeps because he's like, no, but I'm going to go back to being a size 32. And I'm like, but it's been, like, 8 years. Like, do you think maybe you're just, like, not a you're, like, you're not ever going to be a 32 anymore? And he's like, that's insane. And I'll talk to you later, you know, and like, and then it's just like this where this just like stack of pants. So I feel like it's for him because he was quite skinny, you know, and I just think he can't like let go of that image of himself, you know. So I feel like that's
for guys, I think we're you know, you want the six pack abs.
Yeah.
And the hope is that later on in life, when you're old and dying,
you'll have time.
You get the six on the way out. You get one final selfie for your Instagram page. You're like, I did it, and then you fit into my size 32 pants.
You're like 92, and you're fitting into your 32 pants. Yeah, I think that's what I think. He's like, no. Like when my kid is like older, I'm going to have all of the abs back and I'm going to, you know. Yeah, I think he just keeps thinking like that's going to happen. And
he's prepping for his midlife crisis.
Very exciting for me. I hope maybe he'll have a motorcycle.
Yeah. I will sometimes get in a headspace, too, where I'm like, perhaps my fashionable daughter will want the pants.
Oh, I've done that as well. I've done that as well because I have taken clothes from my mom.
Fashionable daughter. Yes. Exactly, right? Like sometimes I did get really cool stuff from my mom.
Oh my God, I got amazing like stuff from the 80s, like crazy like fucking shoulder pad dresses and stuff from my mom. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So then I have this imaginary fashionable daughter who in the future is gonna want the pants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Folks, I would like to know where you stand on this critical issue. Like I said, among the top five most important things we've talked about on this show, next to climate change, maybe second, maybe climate change is second to this. Well, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue talking. Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like, we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine, like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. Like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing, you don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off the shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's pros.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/fakethenation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. I just want to remind listeners that we're actually taping this show much earlier than we normally tape a show. So if you're thinking that we're going to address the political issue du jour this week, we're actually not going to do that because we're taping too early to do that. But
Something did happen last week that I think we should turn our attention to, which is that Gmail turned 20. And it felt like a milestone in internet history. And I honestly, I hardly know anyone who doesn't use Gmail. So my question is, you know, we're going to then kind of go generally and talk more about the internet. But first, have you ever looked at Gmail and thought you've outlived your service? And like, what is your relationship? Moz, what's, do you have Gmail? What's your relationship with Gmail?
Yeah, I when I read that article, it reminded me that I did have Gmail. I'd forgotten I had Gmail. I mean, I have these two Gmail accounts because I had a guy who, the guy who set up my website said you can do it where you can take another email that you want and have that go through your Gmail. So I've never, that's the main email I use. So I never see it as Gmail. And then I've got a second Gmail page that's just Gmail. And when I read the article, I totally remembered, just like the guy was saying in the article, a guy or girl, I don't know who did it, but they basically were saying how they have so much stuff in that Gmail folder and it's mostly junk. And it would take, you know, an eternity to delete it. So that's what my Gmail is sitting there for. It used to be the Gmail was the Gmail address was the one I would give out for signing up for stuff because I knew they were going to be emailing me, you know, junk stuff. So and now junk has gone beyond. We all know. Like I think I donated once or twice to some campaign, and now every political party hits me up. Like I was saying, like I almost wish we lived in a dictatorship. Just so I didn't get the political emails.
Yeah.
The texts, too. I know this is an email conversation, but the texts are getting crazy. I get texts every day that are like, help! And I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? And then they're like, it's Kamala Harris. And I'm like, okay, stop.
Well, we're going to get to that in a second. I want to hear your thoughts on Gmail because we actually we got a listener email about the text. So I do want to hear your thoughts on that. But Elise, do you, like, Gmail turned 30. Does it feel like, is it something that still thrills
it turned 20. You?
You
said 30. It turned 20.
20.
You said
30. It's 20. Gen 20, Z. Sorry.
Gmail is Gen Z. I live a freelance life, so I have so many Gmails. It's kind of ridiculous. They're not all at Gmail. They're like my email for every weird company that I work for, and then my personal Gmail. So I'm constantly toggling between various Gmails and like Gmail affiliated accounts. But I will say it is kind of a thrill sometimes where you get, when you get an email from one of the oldies, a Yahoo or a Hotmail pops in and you're like, okay.
Vintage. Yeah.
Okay. The fonts are going to be all crazy. It's got no subject. You're like, this is going to be a ride.
Well, I mean, I feel this. So the piece that Moz was referring to is by Ezra Klein in the New York Times. And it was like this weird, I mean, it was this beautifully written piece. It was like some of the best writing I've ever heard about email. But here's something that he said in there that I thought was really interesting. He said, I have thousands of photos of my children, but few I've set aside to revisit. I have records of virtually every text I've ever sent since I was in college, but no idea how to find the ones that meant something. I spent years blasting my thoughts to millions of people on X and Facebook, even as I fell behind on correspondence with dear friends. I have stored everything and saved nothing. And I think for me, a beautiful thought. And that is how I feel about my Gmail. It is this bloated, horrible albatross. I will never get to its depths. No amount of scuba gear can get me to the bottom of the vast ocean that is the unread emails. And they just build, and I pay some amount of storage fee every month because that's how crazy it's gotten, and I would need several weeks to figure it out, or I do what Ezra Klein did and shut it down and fucking move on to a new address, which I don't know that I'm prepared to do that either.
I know, I was like, that shook me. My ancient emails,
the fucking scrolls that I've kept. And the funny thing is, my mom, who also has Gmail, she calls me a couple weeks ago, and she's like, there are no emails in my Gmail. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then I open up her Gmail because I'm trying to figure it out. You know, she's a senior citizen. She's not great with technology. And literally, Gmail has erased everything.
What?
Don't know why, don't know how, right? And it's possible it's a my mom's user error, but like, I don't even know that she would know how to erase everything. Like, you know what I mean? It's just truly everything is gone. And the interesting thing is, she was like flummoxed for a moment, but it essentially didn't matter to her because nothing of value does she maintain on email.
When what I was if you like, found out that your mother? What if you found out that your mother's a spy and the Russians hacked in? And you're treating her like she's a senior citizen, didn't know what she's doing. Meanwhile, she's trying to lure you into helping her in her mission, whatever it is.
Oh my God, she's in the Americans, a real life version. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, Maz. This is putting the entire thing in a new perspective that I really have to think about. Yeah. She is Iranian, so she's fucking already shifty.
I don't trust your mom. That's all I'm saying. I don't trust your mom.
Okay, well let's talk about so we talked about Gmail, but I wanted to generally talk about this concept that was coined by Cory Doctorow called the inshittification of the internet. And he talked about like basically the inshittification of platforms. We experienced it very particularly with Facebook and with Amazon. So what happens, like we'll use Amazon as the case that Cory Doctorow makes, which is that, for example, Amazon in its early years for 10 years or so subsidized your purchases. You know, they made the prices really, really low. They made shipping free, blah, 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 so that you would get addicted to Amazon. And then throughout that process, other retailers started shutting down. Amazon became increasingly the only place to go. And then, I'm exaggerating because there's still plenty of other places to go in real life. But then it also started to work on sellers. That's phase two. You work on sellers. You get sell. Oh, we're going to subsidize. We're going to like reduce the commissions. We're going to be the best place for you to like do your selling. They do that. And then all the sellers become that's chained to you. And then the third phase is now we're going to raise prices. Now we require payola. Now if you want to sell something, you have to pay extra money to get it on page one of our search results. Now if you're a buyer and you want to buy a spatula, we're going to give you 40 things that aren't necessarily the spatula that you're asking for because all these sellers are paying to be on the top search results. And then your experience as a person on Amazon, as a seller on Amazon, starts to deteriorate, but then you feel like you have nowhere else to turn. They're the only game in town. And you're just experiencing the inshittification of a platform. What do you think about, I mean, does this trajectory resonate with you? And do you feel like you're experiencing it more and more?
Capitalism sucks. this is the whole thing of trickle-down theory, trickle-down economics, right? Where they go, oh, the people that are rich are going to look out for the people that aren't rich. I mean, the fact is, people that are rich are going to look out for themselves and want more boats, so they're going to do things like this, and we all kind of go along, and then you get screwed, and then you don't have any options, and that's why you need regulations, but regulations are always like 100 years behind, and so we end up in this situation. I mean, I don't know what I'm paying right now on Amazon because it's still so convenient to buy stuff on there. But I do know that I got these little Charlie Bear treats for the dog. And I was ordering them on Amazon for about 10 bucks or so a packet. And I was at the coffee shop with this guy that I see, you know, some of the regulars at the coffee shop. And the guy's like, oh, you know, you get this from Trader Joe's? I go, no, I get them on Amazon. He goes, how much you pay? I go pay like 10, 11. He goes, oh, they're only $3 at Trader Joe's. I was like, what?
Oh, my God.
I'm paying $8, $9 for some dude to deliver to me? So, yes, we're getting screwed, people. We're getting screwed. Yeah.
Not even a dude, a drone, like a robot to bring it to you, basically.
Yeah. Like, for more. Right, they make you think that now this is the best deal, this is the best thing, and then you've created your, you know, I remember hearing people talk about like, I mean, I generally don't do online shopping, so like that's my weird position, which is increasingly like unusual. But I know, I remember, you know, friends of mine were saying, well, like, I like to know my purchase history. And I was like, oh, but then I was like, but fucking why? Like, who cares? Yeah. Like, also, who cares? I don't know. I just felt like that was one of the crazier things that I had heard about, like, you know, really defending their, you know, their kind of like online purchasing. But it does, right? I mean, like, we saw it with Facebook, right? At least that, like, Facebook deteriorated mm-hmm. before our very eyes. I mean, what does it
make? Totally.
Where does it leave you? Do you feel like you have? Are you like, I will break off and go to another platform that nobody's on? Or like, what does it make you feel?
I did break away from Facebook. That I actually did do. I feel like it's happening with Instagram before our very eyes once again, which I think it's like a slightly different situation with the social media companies, where in order to compete with whatever new thing is up, so TikTok, in the case of Instagram, they're like, okay, we need you to be posting videos, and we need you to be posting videos every single day. And if you're not posting videos every single day, all of the stuff that you enjoyed about this app is going to plummet. Your followers aren't going to see what you're posting. Your engagement's going to go down. Your reach is going to go down, et cetera, et cetera. And because I like worked in the Instagram influencer space for a really long time, I feel like I've seen it very specifically, where like they will just change the algorithm to fit whatever goal they have. And you, as a person who, I mean, I'm not an influencer who like makes money on the app, but there are people who like that's their business.
Yeah.
It's either their actual business as an influencer or like their small business or whatever. And they'll just change it and be like, sorry, you got to make 10 videos a day now, or no one's going to see your shit. And it's also like very insidious, I feel, because they feel no responsibility for the people who actually create their platform, or for like the people who have built businesses on their platform. And then with the Amazon example, I feel like Uber is doing that.
Oh, right. Now. Uber was also another example that Cory Doctorow talked about, because Uber subsidized your rides in the early days. It felt very mm-hmm. cheap. So then yellow cabs fell out of favor. I mean, obviously yellow cabs are like specific to certain cities, but in general, other forms of transportation or like investment in public transportation fell out of favor mm-hmm. because Uber seemed like such a cheap option. And then they pull the rug out because venture lead capital is like, now we need to see profit. So then they start boosting the prices, seeing profit, and then the entire experience changes.
Totally.
And now I feel like one out of every, I don't know, I mean, again, I'm a yellow cab person like 95% of the time, but when I'm in other cities, I'll use Uber or Lyft or whatever, and I feel like, I mean, in some weird number of times, a ride gets canceled and like I don't understand why or whatever. And I'm like, this doesn't feel like reliable. And, you know,
yeah.
Like, why is this happening?
Yeah. I mean, I just noticed the price go up an enormous amount.
Enormous amount.
Yeah. In New York, like if I can catch a yellow cab, I definitely will. But I live in Brooklyn and they're not like around
yeah.
to be hailed in yeah. the same way as like Manhattan. So And Brooklyn's not really well connected by public transit either. Thank you, Robert Moses. That's my other soapbox. I can't even get into that. But so I started really using Ubers a lot to get around within Brooklyn. And now I have just noticed the price went crazy. And it's not like I'm getting a different service. I'm still going to the same places. But it's maybe even like double the price.
And by the way, when they have you signed up, whether it's Uber, Amazon, whatever, I'm not paying attention as much to the pricing until later, because you're just like, yeah, hit click, yeah, whatever, tip, sure, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So it is, it's very, it is insidious in many ways. And the thing you were talking about, at least with Instagram and stuff, it feels fickle. Like that's the other thing, is you don't, it's yeah. so changing so fast every time. Like I tried to get into TikTok, they go, now TikTok wants you to do horizontal videos. I was like, but I've just started doing vertical videos. Like, why would you want a horizontal? And then I tried a few horizontal, and I'm like, this looks horrible because it's just stand up now from a distance. Like, people can't see it, but they wanted it, and it was getting like, it would get more views, but it wouldn't get that much engagement. So I was like, they're just pushing it out to get views, but there's no one's commenting on it. So the quality of what I'm putting out is like, is not as good as I want it to be. So it really is this world where, and then try to reach people. Like I had a whole thing where Facebook had like demonetized me because it said that I'd violated something. And then we tried to find somebody. Yeah. I had to like reach out to my agents and friends that I knew that knew people at Facebook. It was just, and then I still didn't know what I'd done. It's very fickle. It's very much kind of the Wild West, and they can turn on the spigot and turn it off whenever they want. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, it really is. I mean, if you step back and start analyzing it, you're like, what am I doing? Why am I on?
What
these
am I doing?
Things?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's how I feel. Yeah. It the inshittification does feel like it's happening like sort of across the internet. Let's quickly address the text messages from the different parties. Now, Robin from Nashville emailed us and said that she gets multiple text messages every day asking for money. She basically points out she can't figure out how she got on these lists. She's deleted hundreds. She oftentimes can't figure out how to get off of the list because they're different phone numbers they pop in. She actually also gets texts from the Trump side. And the funny thing is my husband has tried to get off of the Trump list. I mean, he doesn't know why he got on them, right? He's like, marry to me. And he, like, every day, Don Jr., every day, some other phone number, but it's me, it's Don Jr. And this, you know, and they're insane, like they're so insane. And he can't get off of it. And I don't know. Basically, Robin was sort of like, am I alone or is this like happening to everyone? And also, like, do we know? And her concern is like, are some of these scams, like, or is it literally like operatives are using this tactic? Because she felt like sometimes people may have been maybe taking the money and then putting it elsewhere. So I don't have any intel on that yet, and I have to do a lot more research. But I'm wondering, like, how ruinous have the text messages been for you guys?
I get so many, and I do think that Ben Sheehan, who is, like, kind of an influencer in the political space, and he like, does a lot of stuff on Instagram, I believe he looked into this, and some of them are scams. Like, they're not real. They don't go to real organizations or, like, what they purport to go to. And it's really hard to actually figure out which ones are real. And, like, a lot of the ones I get will be for organizations I've never heard of. I'm like, how did you get my number? I reply stop to all of them, but it never stops.
It doesn't stop. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Elise, let's not forget that even what's quote unquote real is a scam. All the money that Trump raised is going to his court. So it's a scam regardless.
Yeah. True.
And I think, Nagin, it's like, you know, if you donated once or twice or whatever on one of these lists, then you get on all the lists. And just like you said, I get stuff from like Ted Cruz. I get stuff from Donald Trump, like people that I'd really just despise. And then if you go on X or Twitter or whatever the hell it's called now, that's even worse because I'm constantly seeing stuff from the side that I don't want to hear from. And I'm getting stuff from the side that I do want to hear from. But at the same time, I'm like, geez, how much money am I going to give? And then in the back of my mind, there's always this thing of like, oh my God, if I don't give and we lose, I'm really going to
regret
this.
Yes, it makes me feel guilty all the time. Instead of some of the, like, it's like the guilt never relents because anytime I pick up my phone, there's likely to be a text, right? And so it feels like this constant drumbeat of guilt and fear, and like, I don't want to do that drumbeat, guys. Is that healthy for any of us? So talk about the inshittification. Like, this feels like part of it. So I think, but at least you bring up a really excellent point, which is that if you have serious intentions of donating money, you should do it through a website, through a trusted source, like if it's Act Blue or Swing Left or whatever, like something that you know to be going to the places where you want it to go to. I feel like the text messaging is gone so out of control. It cannot be, you know, it just can't, you can't believe in it.
And again, wouldn't it be great if we lived in a society where they said instead of having something like Citizens United, where these corporations are spending, you know, millions and millions, and then you and I are, you know, us three have to donate enough to try and counter
totally.
The donation from some, you know, from the Koch brothers.
Right.
Wouldn't it be great if there was just a society where it was like, all right, each side is going to get this much allotted to them.
Yep.
And you can raise X, Y, and Z amount, and that's it. And then we go. I mean, it's like that would be
like
a society that's taking care of its citizens.
And by the way, that society, it's called Japan. I've talked about the Japanese election system before. They have just a very specific amount of money you're allowed to spend. The posters all have to be one size. The banners have to be a particular blah, blah, blah. It's like, so everything is regimented. So you can't go off script. You can't introduce a ton of money. It's everyone gets the same exact fucking thing. Take a look at Japan. I'm sure they do a ton of things terribly, but this one thing, I think they're doing quite well.
If only Japan were real.
All right, let's move on to topic number three. Okay, sure. Kids are anxious. Students all over college campuses are anxious, among other mental health challenges. And in fact, in 2022, nearly 14% of 18 to 25-year-olds reported having serious thoughts about suicide. But it's possible that parents are even worse. We read a piece from a psychiatrist on a college campus who talks about the parents and how they rarely accept that some anxiety is normal. They blow it out of proportion and make things worse. Now, Maz, you're a parent. What did you think reading this piece?
Well, I mean, they're right. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety, especially around college now. There was some Instagram page. I mean, again, the unfortunate thing about social media is that we have so many people with so many different takes on things, and everyone can do whatever they want. And so, but they don't think necessarily about the results. There was a guy, and he would sit on this Instagram page, and I guess he was well-intentioned, but he was trying to tell parents how hard it is to get into college. So he'd be reading the applications of people. He'd go, okay, this kid had a, you know, 4.9 and played the trombone and was the star athlete and this, 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 and this. And they didn't get into their top 10 schools, this school, this school, this school, this school. And, you know, parents watching this are going, oh my God, my kid's not going to go to college. I mean, it just rises the anxiety. And my take as someone who really took the road less traveled, where I studied something completely differently and ended up becoming a comedian, I'm like, it's going to be okay. It's all going to be okay, like, no matter what happens. And your kid will find their way, whether they get a degree from Harvard or they don't get a degree at all, or they, whatever. It's just chill. But it's a lot easier said, and parents do freak out. And I think that the modern society really feeds it, and it's not healthy at all.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting to me about this piece was like thinking about my own college experience, which is that my parents had exactly no involvement in any of it. Like, my parents didn't know what I was doing, what I was taking, what I was majoring in, what part of campus do I live, or what kind of classes, like nothing. My parents were not involved. Not to say my parents don't love me. They just didn't. They were just like, well, she's like doing a thing, and she's got to grow up and fucking do it. You know what I mean? They were just like that. What are we going to do? Like, this is ridiculous. What, get involved? That's crazy. I don't know. Elise, what did you think about these anxious parents?
It's so tough because I do feel like, on the one hand, I feel for the kids of today, and that they like have dealt with, you know, they had to go to school in the pandemic, and all of us
sucks.
Of us went a little kooky.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us came out of that unscathed. So the heightened level of anxiety, I understand. And then also this fear from parents that's like, oh my God, my kid has been damaged by this thing that I have no control over, and I have to protect them, and I have to make sure that I have to save the experience that I thought that they were going to have. I have to save the life that I thought that they were going to have. But kind of to Maz's point, like, it's going to be okay, you know? And I do, okay. I do think that I feel like we're seeing a real shakeup in how college is perceived and how kids want to pursue college. And I think that that might be difficult for some parents, especially of like the millennial Gen X generations, where we were told, like, you got to go, you got to get into the best school you possibly can. what you study there sets the tone for the rest of your life. And like, that is how you succeed. But I think what we have also seen is that that's not really what panned out. So I think taking some of the pressure off of that is probably a good idea. I majored in Spanish and I don't speak Spanish. I didn't then and I don't now. So
yeah, I mean, and I think like the writer said it best of the piece that we saw. I think it was in The Times. Matilde Ross says, quote, "I worry that the current obsession with mental health awareness is disempowering parents from helping their adult children handle ordinary things." And so, yeah I think you're right, Elise. It's like this, you know, trying to save the experience, like mold it in the way they see best or whatever. And it's like, you do have to like recognize that your kid, a friend of mine has an 8-year-old that she let him, he like go buy something from a bodega that was like 3 blocks away on his own. And by the, just for New Yorkers out there, like this is very not done right now. Like, you know, it's very, very, but she's like, I'm trying to build a fucking independent person, you know? Mm-hmm. I was running around the streets of New York as an 8-year-old. This fucking kid needs to do this, you know? And she's like, you know, so she was like pretty, you know, and I was like, this is interesting. And it really made me feel like, oh my God, I don't want to like keep my kid dependent on me, you know? And it really opened my eyes. And then reading this piece, and I was like, all right, I also need to calm down as the parent younger child.
It is so tough too, because like, you know, I remember growing up and like I got a phone in like 8th grade or whatever, but I didn't even always have it on me and stuff. Like me and my friends would be like loose running around the neighborhood, like terrorizing shopping centers of all stripes. And, you know, we were okay. But then a lot of times, like I for whatever reason, I think TikTok thinks I'm a mom, but I get all this stuff that's like, there's a lot of really anxiety making stuff on there that's like, oh, it'll be like a woman in her car who's like, I was almost snatched at Walmart. Someone came up and they asked me a question I could tell they were trying to snatch me. Or like, if someone puts a napkin on your car door, it's actually poison and they're trying to get you. It's like there's so much
stuff like that. Yeah.
To scare you, that's like someone is going to try to snatch you. They're going to snatch your kid. They're going to poison you with a napkin. Like, it's just
it's endless.
I get why people feel scared.
Yeah.
You got to let them, like we let our kids start biking around the pandemic, and then they would bike around town. And LA is not the best place to bike, but we still would say, okay, go when you get there, text us, you know, when you're coming back, text us. They ran into a couple situations where they felt like somebody was going to try and steal their bike or something. But those are all good things. My son now in LA has been taking the bus. So I think ultimately, little steps like that, you got to let them try it. And either they succeed or they might end up in a child labor camp in China. But I mean, that's fine. I mean, these things happen, you know? I mean, that's part of their story. Right. That's their story. You understand what I'm saying? Great.
They need some content for their upcoming solo shows, you know?
Yeah, I'm just saying. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, folks, let me know. Did you end up at a Chinese labor camp? hit us up on the internet, the inshittified internet. Folks, that is the end of the show. Oh my God, I'm so glad I got to spend this time with you. You're both so gosh darn smart and delightful. And I would love for people of Fake the Nation to be able to find you and all the wonderful things that you do. Elise Morales, where do they do that?
Yes. Okay, first and foremost, you can listen to the Go Touch Grass podcast and follow us on all socials at Go Touch Grass Pod. And then you can find me on Instagram at Pandalise and on TikTok at Elise Navidad.
Maz Jobrani, where do they find you?
I have a special on YouTube. It's called The Birds and the Bees. It's free. You don't even have to watch it. Just hit play and walk away so that the algorithm thinks you're watching it. I'm also touring all over the country, mazjobrani.com, and I'm on all the social media at mazjobrani, MazJobrani.
Folks, you know where to find me and all the stuff that I do at Nagin Farsad on all of the platforms. And also, I'm going to be in Williamsport, Pennsylvania on May 4th. So if you happen to be in town, I'm part of a really fantastic show in Williamsport, which is like one of these lovely towns that people visit when the weather is nice and frolic. I am also going to be, I'm going to be in Chicago doing Wait Wait at some point. I'm going to be doing a bunch of dates in other tours that are going to be coming up. So I will continue to alert you when I know what I'm doing. But in the meantime, I would like to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire, everyone at HeadGum. Thanks to Gabby Alter for writing our theme music. If you have any questions or concerns, you can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to support us at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. Don't forget to write and review the show on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, because it really does help people find the show. And otherwise, we'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.